Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. We're going to take a journey back in time. We're going to be going to a different part of the world. We're going to be talking with an author, Sharona Bintoff-Muir. Her book is titled, The Book of Telling, Tracing the Secrets of My Father's Lives. Sharona, welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. Thank you for having me.
When I first was made aware of your book, I really thought it was going to have a whole different type of a format to it. Little did I realize that I was going to end up reading about an adventure that was going to take you on quite a journey, and your true story is really quite fascinating. You have the most interesting father. And correct me if I'm misspelling or mispronouncing your father's name, Itzhak Bentov?
Itzhak Bentov, yeah, that's just about right.
Hey, I'm proud of myself. I wasn't sure I was going to get that right. Now, he was a New Age guru, and after he died, you found he had also been very much involved with a secret group that had created Israel's first rocket.
That's true. I had known him. I'd grown up in the United States, and my dad was a freelance inventor back in the 50s and 60s. He had kind of a laboratory in the basement of his house, and I knew him as the sort of wild and crazy mad scientist, really, who invented things in his basement. He invented the first distance-controlled cardiac catheter that lets a doctor go into the heart from outside the body. So I thought of him as a man who made things that heal people in his basement. But after he died, I found out that, yeah, he was connected with a group in Israel who made weapons during Israel's War of Independence in 1948, and that he himself had built Israel's first rocket. And it's something he had never told me, that I had never known.
It's so fascinating when you think you know someone, and of course you didn't have all that much interaction with your dad when you were growing up as you would like to have had, but he was such a unique personality, and at the very end of your introduction into your book, you said all of the book's levels, and they're all multiple levels that you put together in this book, is about a mind search through multidimensional space, the quest of invention itself, which is our human quest to know the universe through individual and collective acts of creation. I thought those are pretty powerful words. When you found out that let's get down to basics. How did you find out that your father had been involved in this particular group, the Science Corps?
Well, Donna, I found out when I was in graduate school, which was about 8 years after he died, and I had this roommate, and he said to me, you know, he was not my roommate. He was looking for a roommate for his house, and he said to me, you know, I found this guy. He's a great housemate, and he knows your father, and this amazed me because I was I was my father's only child, but I was his child from a first marriage. And when he remarried, my father had kind of excluded me from his social circle, sort of to keep domestic peace. His new wife didn't really want me to be included in that life. So I never saw him together with other people. We spent every Saturday alone together, and he would tell me about his inventions, and we'd talk about science. But I never saw him in a kind of social context. So when I heard that there was this young man who, you know, was going to be my friend's housemate, who knew my father, it was like a social connection to my dad 8 years after his death. So I went to see him, and, you know, we had coffee, and he said to me, he was Israeli, this young man, and he said to me, "Your father and my father were together in Israel's War of Independence." I said, "Okay, yeah, sure." I knew that my dad had been over in Israel during the War of Independence, and I knew he had had something to do with weapons and fighting, but not a heck of a lot more than that. And then he said, "Well, you know, of course, that your father invented Israel's first rocket." And my response was, "No, no, no, you've got the wrong Bentov. My father never said anything like that." And he got very, very insistent. He said, "No." And he wrote down the names of six really important nuclear physicists at the Weizmann Institute in Israel. The Weizmann Institute of Science is one of Israel's main scientific centers. It's a center of world-class science. He said, "Call these people. They were your father's friends." And that's how it happened.
What an amazing thing. Now, you also had, you were a graduate student at Stanford, mm-hmm. and you had a unique dream that actually was the stimulus for this quest
yeah.
of investigating these people. Tell us about this dream that you had that started mm-hmm. this adventuresome journey that took you through all kinds of twists and turns. What was this dream?
Donna, I'm amazed that you asked, because of all the readers who've read my book, no one has asked me about the dream, and yet it is what sent me on that journey. Well, I dreamed that I was in a, this sounds silly, but I was in a physics department in a university late at night. There were glass walls to this office, and it was like any university office. It was a Xerox copier, plants hanging, and a bulletin board. And I looked outside the glass walls, and there was a little courtyard, and I saw, it was at night, I saw a man, kind of like an old spy in a 40s movie, in a trench coat, sitting on a bench, and there was a great, huge, shining boulder way above his head, and a huge kind of glass or crystal shaft that descended right toward him. And I realized in my dream, I'm not quite sure how to put this, I've certainly never said it on the radio, but that I was seeing the moon almost as if the moon were a person whose perspective I had, that the moon was giving this sort of shaft of crystalline light down to this person who was sitting on the bench. And I understood that that person was my father, but it wasn't so much my father as he was in real life, the man I knew, so much as his meaning to the larger world, his meaning to the universe, if you'll excuse my using that kind of tacky word. And when I woke up, I had been very shy about the whole story, because there are a lot of weird stories about Israel's mm-hmm. War of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
Israel's a strange place where everybody from all over the world comes, and everybody's got a funny story. And I had thought, you know, I'd been very shy about calling these physicists, because these were world-class scientists, and, you know, I was just little me, and I thought, you know, God, I'll call them up out of nowhere saying, you know, "Did my daddy invent Israel's first rocket? They'll think I'm a fool." And I didn't want to embarrass myself. And I was also, to tell you the truth, I also kind of believed that the story was true in my heart of hearts. But it also felt like the last kind of private treasure that I had of my father. And I was very afraid of someone telling me, "Your treasure is non-existent. This is
mm-hmm.
ridiculous."
Mm-hmm.
So that dream, I called them. And it was true, and it was not only true, but the first person I called was a family, I shouldn't mention names, although they are mentioned elsewhere, but they're a couple of physicists. The husband created Israel's first particle accelerator at the Weizmann Institute and was part of the group who worked on Israel's nuclear resources.
Mm-hmm.
The wife is also a physicist and an educator. She answered the phone. And when I told her who I was, she said, "Sharona, where have you been? We tried to contact you after your father's tragic death, and we couldn't find you. Where have you been all these years?" It was like finding family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very much so. And that is why I think your book is so interesting, because so many times things are hidden for generations. And your father was from the environment, and you mention this in your book, especially in your interviews with these very, very brilliant people who are today elderly. That's how people would describe them.
Oh, yes.
And they are still mentally very, very alert, very attuned to what goes on. Mm-hmm. But here we're talking about a time frame in history when they were very young. They were in their 20s. They were brilliant. Your father was called the man that invents something every minute. You know, he was highly respected by them. Mm-hmm. And he did the very first rocket, and there were all kinds of historical things going on at that time of which he was a part. And what was so fascinating to me is that each and every one of them that you talked with said they had absolutely nothing to work with. They had no grants. They didn't have anything where they were getting support. It was a very, very harsh world, harsh environment. They were having to fight, and they had to design and develop their own weaponry. And here are these young, brilliant minds coming together in secret to do this. It was just, it's just an amazing, amazing story. So here you are.
Uh-huh.
You have found out that this is true.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's written about it in the newspaper. Your father is dearly loved because of his metaphysical expertise.
Yeah.
And as a scientist, you think he's part nuts because you think, my goodness, my father's using a lingo and a language. Oh, yes, he's definitely ready for another planet. And, you know, here's your dad who is so far ahead. And correct me if I'm wrong in my perceptions,
mm-hmm.
but I think your father was ages ahead of most of the people around him. I just think he was so far beyond in the thinking and understanding of what we have today.
Well, that's what is said about him. He wrote a book called Stalking the Wild Pendulum, which has been kind of a New Age bestseller for many years. And, well, he was very exciting to be with because he was always bubbling over with surprise and excitement at what there was in nature. And he also had visions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I thought that, you know, he was a little nuts. But, I mean, it's a good kind of nuts.
Mm-hmm.
To an extent. And he really taught me as a young person that you use your brain, you learn your science, but then you just open the senses and, you know, let the visions come in. It's a hard thing to learn.
Oh, yes.
Yes, the group that he was part of was called the Science Corps, or Chemed in Hebrew. And in 1948, they were really just a bunch of science professors and students. Israel at that time had all of two universities. It was a tiny, very poor backwater. And, you know, these professors and their students, David Ben-Gurion, who was Israel's first prime minister, made them into a kind of research and development unit of Israel's new army. Well, Israel's new army at that time was mostly volunteers, and they were mostly teenagers. The Science Corps was also mostly teenagers with a couple of brilliant physicists thrown in. None of them were paid a dime. And for their research budget, you know, for their projects, they had a budget of $3,000. This was for military R&D, so you can imagine. I mean, a stealth bomber costs a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, they were working with, you know, leftover water pipes, oil. They cannibalized an oil pipe that the British had sort of abandoned in the wake of the Middle East troubles in 1948. So they really were amateurs. They were not professional weapons inventors. Most of them were students who hadn't even taken their final exams. And they were trying basically to reinvent the weapons of World War II, things like the flamethrower, the bazooka, and so on and so forth, because they knew that Israel was facing an invasion of the Arab armies. And this was different from the, I don't want to get into a lot of Middle Eastern history.
Mm-hmm.
It's a painful history. I mean, rockets are still raining on Israel, and they're also still raining on the Arabs, and it's
mm-hmm.
a very heartbreaking history.
Yes, it is.
But to me, what stands out from that, Donna, what I wanted to take from that was not, I mean, the story of Israel mattered to me very much. I felt that I had been given that story as a trust to pass on to
mm-hmm.
the Jewish people and to others who were interested in that history. But what is most important to me out of that is what human creativity can do.
I agree. I agree. And that is what really stood out to me. And you bring out in your book about the Sunspire, the solar energy lab at the Weizmann Institute of Science. You talk about the people that you met and how they progressed forward. And this, again, was relating to a person that knew your father very, very well. And you talked about the first principles. He remembered when your father came into the group, and he said it was just phenomenal. And he talks about all kinds of things that went on. And there was also a piece of information that I thought was very interesting, and that was about the first president of Israel, Chaim Weizmann, who was the founder and namesake of the Weizmann Institute. This was a man that had extraordinary principles.
Yeah.
Extraordinary principles. And you bring that out so beautifully in your book.
Yeah. None of these people thought that they were going to end up inventing weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And Chaim Weizmann, yeah, he hated the fact that the Science Corps were at his institute making weapons. He had envisioned the institute as being the place that would bring new agricultural techniques and new prosperity to Asia and Africa, because he saw Israel as part of the Third World, and he believed that Israel's mission was to enrich the Third World, to share the bounty of Western science with other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that, I mean, he saw the 48 war as something that the Jews had to win for their survival, but it broke his heart that his institute was being used to make weapons. And the gentleman you mentioned, who, when I talked to him, he was head of the solar energy lab at the Weizmann Institute. All of them put the weapon stuff behind them.
Yes,
and he really wanted to go on to create power from the sun. These were people who had gotten into science through the love of physics and the love of sharing knowledge. That's the funny thing about knowledge. It can be used to destroy, and it can be used to create. Sometimes the same people have to do both.
That's true. And that is another aspect. That's another level in your book, because there's all kinds of times in history. I mean, we have them in every nation of the world. There's things that are going on. And if there is a war, there is a patterning that you go on there, and people become very inventive. And then it's what do you do with the information after you're no longer at the war? I mean, you look at the United States and look at how the Industrial Revolution just exploded because of all of the technology that had been developed, new freeways that were built, all kinds of things that evolved from that that enabled us to move forward with a wonderful impetus on so many levels. But here you have it in Israel, these great minds going to work in a different way. They didn't really want to focus on that, but they focused on what they felt was necessary at the time. Now, part of this process, you discovered your dad's first wife, Ziva.
Oh, yeah.
What a character she is.
That was wild. You know, you mentioned that this search was kind of a multidimensional one, and it's true. There was the dimension of science, you know, which I discovered. There was the dimension of history. And there was the dimension of, you know, my personal history and family. What happened was that all the scientists told me, look, you know, we knew your father very well as soon as he came to us with this funny little electric rifle that he was inventing, and we knew he was a genius, and we adopted him. But, you know, before that, he came from this kibbutz in the Negev. You know, there were about 15 of these little farming kibbutzim, these cooperative villages in the Negev. And they said, you know what? The old folks from the kibbutz always know the story. They know the dirt about everybody. Why don't you give them a call and find out what they know about your dad? I didn't expect anything. I thought, you know, they'd have some notation about when he was supposed to clean out the cow shed or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I called their archivist, and I told her, well, my father was, they're very used to getting calls from American Jews of this sort. I said, my father was a member of your kibbutz in the 40s. His name was Itzik Bentov. That was his nickname, Itzik. There was this long pause, and then she said, Itzik Bentov, I am going to faint. The whole kibbutz will faint, and especially Ziva will faint. I'm calling her Ziva.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, who's Ziva? She said, well, she was your father's first wife. And I just about died. And I thought,
whoa.
Oh, good, maybe I'll have brothers and sisters.
Right. You never know. It's like family genealogy. That's part of what you've gone through.
Yeah.
It's genealogy, not just of your own family, but also of those people that your father interacted with. Now, let's talk about the Rocket and Loretta.
Sure.
I just love this story about Loretta because this was named after Loretta Young, the great actress, and I thought, wow. And you got a picture of it in your book. You have a number of photos that go along with the information that you share in your book relative to your father.
Yeah.
So you say that this was a major achievement on the part of your father. How so?
Well, the problem that the Israelis had to solve in 48 in order to fight national armies was how to build anti-tank weaponry, because they had none. And the Loretta, in Hebrew, Loretta means no recoil. They were trying to build a recoilless cannon. That's the kind of cannon that can shoot at a tank. But the problem is that usually a cannon that shoots at a tank has a great big recoil. And in order for it to not, kind of overturn the vehicle it's sitting on, you have to have a very heavy vehicle under that, Just like a person who shoots a gun, I mean, if the recoil is too strong, it's going to knock you down. So most, cannon that can fight against tanks are mounted on very, very heavy vehicles that won't flip over. Well, the Israelis didn't have any such heavy vehicles, so they had to invent a cannon that had no recoil, the Loretta. And the only way to do that was to try to figure out, they knew that one existed, that the Americans had originally built, but there was an arms embargo on Israel at the time, which prevented them from getting the American cannon and also prevented them from getting any technical information, like any blueprints. Okay? So basically you're told, the recoilless cannon that you want exists out there, it's been built, now go and find out how to do it yourself. So my dad had actually begun building a recoilless rifle on his kibbutz, and he'd made it out of a water pipe and some steel wool scouring pads that were connected to a battery. I mean, don't even ask me how. But in the end, what the Science Corps managed to produce was a functional recoilless cannon that had a very special shell. It was called the hollow charge, and that was a whole other story. So you had the recoilless cannon, which was an experimental weapon, and the hollow charge, which was the shell that it shot. These were both experimental, and they were both produced by people who didn't know what they were doing, who had to invent the theory for themselves and had to invent the metallurgy for themselves. You know, they had no steel. You know, I don't want to go on and on. But it was a great achievement kind of on all levels, material, theoretical. And the fact of the matter is, I have to tell you, that it didn't win the war. I'd like to say this was the weapon that gained Israel's independence, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
What it did was, although it was useful, the main thing it did was it forged this group of brilliant students and their professors, who were all somewhat absent-minded and very, very creative, into a research team that worked together, that knew how to do projects. And so they could be funneled from that war immediately into creating the rest of Israel's technology and infrastructure, including Israel's defense. And what they did was they created a kind of national technology, a sort of style of technology that was very innovative. Because they had to solve all these problems without knowing anything, they learned how to kind of step off the cliff and grab your solution. And they brought that style to the rest of every technological problem that they dealt with in Israel. And this was a national leadership, so that was the style that they brought to Israel's technological creativity.
Your father was a man, as I said, that was so far beyond the thinking of most people, yet there was one of these brilliant individuals called Matty that when you presented some of the ideas that your father had regarding the mind, Your father said to you, improving the mind is only the beginning towards an overall refinement of the nervous system.
Yeah.
So at the time he made that comment, that was so far out relative to the thinking of most people. And when you were talking about this to Maddie, he told you about a dream where he had a solution to something that was, a, you know, like a silvery bulge, a bubble, and he took that into to his advisor at his institute or wherever it was he was studying, and the advisor said, okay, you got 10 days to get this all together. And Maddie said, this is just a dream, but he turned, as he said in his own words, his dream into a story.
Right.
And he said the dream he had was a vision. It was not an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and you said, well, my father had experiences like that. What do you think? And he said, you know what? It's real. And I loved what you put in here because you really put in a good amount of the conversation. He said, mistakes are not the end of the world. And he said, what does mind do? And of course, I'm compressing this for time purposes.
Okay.
And you said, what does it do, Maddie? And he said, it searches in multidimensional space. And that just blew you away. Because that's exactly what your father had told you about the mind.
Yes. Yeah. Mari was in charge of Israel's missile program for many decades. He was an incredibly creative person. He probably could have been the conductor of the Israel Philharmonic. But, he had visions, just like my father, and they led him to scientific solutions. And he talked to me mostly about creativity, and that's one of the things he said. He asked me, what does the mind do? I hadn't thought about it. And he answered himself. He said, it searches in a multidimensional space. And this, to me, is the nature of invention. Because invention doesn't occur just on one level. It occurs on all levels, whether it's personal, where you invent new ways to be in your life because you have to. You're pushed to it. Or it's cultural, where, you know, in Israel they invented a new culture. Or it's spiritual. Sometimes we have to invent new ways to interact with God and the universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of these things work together, and they are all part of creativity. And Mani was one of those people who had a very practical job to do. He had to defend Israel. He had to make weapons. But the creativity extended far beyond the nuts and bolts. It included dreams. It included vision. It included knowledge. It included, most of all, the willingness to leap into the unknown.
Mm-hmm. And that's what your father did, too.
Absolutely.
Your book is absolutely wonderful.
I think
it shows that, there, again, you've covered a number of different levels. You've covered the cultural aspect. You've covered the historical aspect. You have covered the variables of thought that you went through as you were on this journey of adventure and personal exploration. You discovered a new family that you didn't know you had. I mean, there's all kinds of parts to this book. I think you have just done an absolutely awesome job. And it's called The Book of Telling, Tracing the Secrets of My Father's Life. Sharona, how did this change your life?
Well, for one thing, if you love your dad to distraction and you want to know him, then to write a book that gets that out of your system is very important. It was kind of a way of finding the way to say that I loved him that I couldn't say before. It was also a way, once you see your parents and know them as human beings, you can go on with your life. You've kind of rounded off that. It was a way of discharging my debt to the Jewish people for my being part of them and having that heritage. And also a way, I hoped, of giving something to people who are creative and maybe need a little inspiration. So,
your book is wonderful. Now, by the way, what is the website?
The website is thebookoftelling.com, as one word.
And then you also have something on YouTube.
Yeah. The university where I work made a film of my giving a reading. I've read it at a number of places, at my alma maters, at Princeton, at Stanford, and also at Brown and Brandeis. But this is at Bowling Green State University, and it's on YouTube. If you put in Sharona Muir, you can come up with some readings of the book.
All right, and Sharona is spelled S-H-A-R-O-N-A, Muir, M-U-I-R. Sharona, this has been a pleasure. You have done your father a great service, and I think your story is going to be enjoyed by many. Thank you for being my guest.
Thank you, Donna.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, more good things to share. So don't you go anywhere. We're going to come back in just a moment. Donna Sebo here. Don't forget, thebookoftelling.com. Just go right to that website, thebookoftelling.com. And, again, you can see Sharona's movie, her reading on YouTube as well. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. If this is your first time of hearing the Donna Sebo Show, we're delighted to have you as part of our listening family. And all I require is that you give me your first name or your initial. Of course, I always enjoy knowing where you're calling from. And then after that, let me do what I do, and that's giving you my mental perceptions, and then you're welcome to ask me a question when I finish about anything that you like. And that's how simple it is. Don't forget, those of you who are listening in the state of Washington, the Northwest Women's Show is coming up. It is coming up not this weekend. This is Easter weekend for a lot of people. It's coming up the following weekend, the 28th, the 29th, and the 30th. This is a marvelous event. We have over 40,000 women that come out for this, and we just absolutely have a fabulous, fabulous time. So I want to be sure to invite you to go to their website, Northwest Women's Show, and you will be able to find out all kinds of information, like that it's at Quest, the convention center there in downtown Seattle. Also, the hours are 10 till 6. You'll find out more and more information that I think will be very valuable to you. They also have a special price on tickets that you buy online. So don't hesitate to go there. I'm going to be in booth number 406. I also will be speaking and will be available for many consultations in my booth. Look for the bright yellow banner that says The Donna Sebo Show, bbsradio.com. I invite you to come along and to be a part of this wonderful, wonderful event. The people that have put this together, they do such an outstanding job, and we are delighted to have you there. Again, give me a call if you would like to chat, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, I want to be sure to encourage you, if you are, like so many of us are, feeling that urge of spring. Yes, this is the first day of spring. And I don't know about you, But when the weather starts getting nicer and the sun is beginning to shine, well, spring cleaning fever begins to attack you. Can sort of sneak up on you, but one of the things it's very good to do is to go into the garage. Yes, you need to be aware that there are certain things that when it comes time to clean up, and boy, I know we found some stuff in our garage that we need to really be thoughtful about how we dispose of. Misty McNally gave some very good information, and I thought I would share it with you, because sometimes we have picked up stuff through the years, and we just put it up on a shelf. I know we have shelves in our garage, and often every now and then I'll say, oh, I think I'm going to need this particular product. And maybe you've had a problem with pests, or maybe you're doing something out in the yard, and so you've had insecticides or some other things. Well, we need to be able to go through, one, clean out the garage, but also to purge some of this material we've got. And Misty made some very, very good comments. It found in research by the Home Safety Council that 94% of households report there's at least one dangerous item in their garage. Now, this can be anything from lawn care products to paint to automotive fluids. And many homes have the equivalent of about 100 pounds of hazardous household waste. And often it is stored in the garage. There are so many different things we need to be aware of. He said 20% of new homes have three-stall garages or bigger, but it seems like the more space people have, the more clutter they get. So all that junk can really be a problem. And what we're not often aware of is that carbon monoxide and volatile organic compounds, which are often abbreviated to VOCs, can be released from paints, gasoline, and solvents, and they can actually permeate through your foundations, through wherever the walls are, into your house, especially those of us that have attached garages. So you want to be sure that you take care of disposing things in a very special way. Now, if you have motor oil of any kind, one spilled oil change can contaminate millions of gallons of fresh water after it washes down your driveway and going into the storm drains. So if you have oil in your garage, go to a dealership, an oil change specialist, or a repair shop, and let them take care of disposing it for you. Okay, I know we've got a caller, and I've got some more tips that I want to share with you, because there's some things that I have found that I have discovered in my own garage. Let's go to our first caller. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
E from Lakewood.
Hi, dear. I cannot hear you. Your voice is so faint. I heard Lakewood, but I didn't hear anything else.
Oh, E from Lakewood.
Okay. Lakewood what, California?
Washington.
Washington. Oh, boy. Okay, you're enjoying the gray skies today like I am.
Yes.
Okay, hon. Now, the first thing I'm looking at with you is you have got to really manage your time. You've got a lot on your plate, and you've been able to loosen things up so you're not so compressed with activity. But immediately, it's like when you have any kind of open space, your mind says, oops, got to do something over here. I've got to get busy. But I want you to start building a wider wedge of alone time. And the reason I say this is that there is a major change that you are wanting to make in your life. And it could be regarding work, it could be personal lifestyle, but for you to be able to put together all of the components, you are going to need to really look carefully at certain facts and details that you have not been able to give any attention to. And so I want you to have that time. So little by little, let's expand this wedge of open space and time for yourself so that you can give what you need to you and be able to go through the process of organization, elimination, and restructuring of what is your priority, or I should say your priorities, then you're going to be able to get everything moving very quickly and very rapidly. So I want you to be patient with yourself. Don't feel like you've got to keep adding to your plate of activity. Let's leave some space and let's make it bigger. Do you have a question for me?
Yes. I usually call you before I go on a trip, and you're always exactly right with your advice, and it always helps. And I'm going to Laguna Beach with my son, and I wondered if you had any advice for me or what you saw.
I think that you can have, it depends on your plans, you could have a relatively quiet, uneventful trip, which is not a bad thing if that's what you'd like to have. I believe, though, if you and your son really think things through, you are going to be able to visit some places that are especially meaningful to you. Now, I'm seeing you with a windbreaker on, and you seem to be on an area of coastline. I'm wondering if maybe you're going to go down towards San Diego somewhere. But I'm seeing some pretty big rocks, and you're standing in the general area, and the wind seems to be whipping around, not too severely, but it's chilling. So you'll need to have on something that'll insulate you from wind. And I'm seeing you just thoroughly enjoying the view. It's absolutely marvelous. But the weather seems to be a little moist, not much. I'm not seeing heavy storms, but I'm seeing a moisture. So I think you're going to need to be prepared that the temperatures might be a little chilly on the coast, wherever it is that you may decide you're going to visit. But I'm seeing sea lions. And I'm looking at just a beautiful environment. This might even be an area that has natural refuge for sea life. But it is really, really nice. And I think that, again, there's some planning that can go on here. It all depends on what you want to do on the trip. I think that you're going to enjoy it. You're going to have a good time with it. Just be sure that you have good walking shoes, comfortable walking shoes, and that if you know you're going to be on rocks or anything else, be sure you have the kind of sole on the shoe that will allow a grip so you're not going to, you know, slide if there's moisture on these rocks that I'm looking at. But other than that, it looks like it's a pretty stable trip.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. I'll remember to bring a jacket then for the wind.
I would. A good windbreaker. You don't seem to have a hat on. Your hair is just blowing every which way. But, you know, that's part of the fun, I think.
Okay.
All right, dear, you have a wonderful trip.
Thank you so much.
You are welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Thiebaud, and if you'd like to give me a buzz, the telephone number to call in to is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all I need, just like with tape from Lakewood, Washington, all I need from you is your first name or initial, and after that, I'll tell you what I perceive. Antifreeze. My goodness, just about everybody I know likes to store this, especially when winter comes. Of course, we're coming out of winter now. We're in the first day of spring. But we have this in case things start getting low, and antifreeze is something that you want also for the summer months. So almost everybody I know has this. And you have to be very, very careful with this. I've known more than one family that has discovered their dog or their cat has accidentally gotten into antifreeze, and of course it kills the pet just very quickly. Now, there is a type of antifreeze that is not toxic to, it's not lethal, but it's something that if a pet should get into it, you have a chance of that pet surviving if it should get onto the ground. It's a propylene glycol-based antifreeze. Now, you need to be wise, and instead of trying to change antifreeze in your own location, be sure you let a mechanic do this, because there are recyclers, believe it or not, that take the old antifreeze and old filters that consumers aren't going to use. You don't want this stuff going into landfills. You want to be able to put it into that recycle environment. The recycle business is exploding. I can remember being at a convention many years ago in the early 90s where someone made a comment that the person that invents the method to process garbage in garbage dumps, recycle the garbage in garbage dumps, they're going to be gazillionaires because there is so much of it everywhere. And that's the truth. That is absolutely the truth. Fertilizer, you need to think about what you use because conventional varieties, they find, the runoff that's caused by our watering our lawns, and, of course, if you have storms like we have in the Northwest and rains really heavily, then there's going to be all of that runoff. It can cause algae to bloom in water areas, water tables. It can threaten fish and other types of aquatic life. Now, there are particular certified organic products such as Bradfield Organics, and they have a website, bradfieldorganics.com, and there's TerraCycle All-Purpose Plant Food, which is basically, as they quote it, worm poop, and it's all, you know, you can research this stuff and find out what's not going to be a negative effect on the water tables. That's become a very big issue in the Pacific Northwest. Well, this is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't go away. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't forget to give me a call, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyMD.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or Canadians, 888-815-9756. Now, I also wanted to let you know, those of you in the state of Washington, there is a class I'm going to be presenting on April 19th. Now, that's a Saturday. It's mental ecology. It's about personally empowering you relative to self-esteem and helping you to reach that level of understanding about how you can accomplish what you want to accomplish for yourself. So this is going to be a class. It'll start at 10 in the morning. It's going to be held at the Center for Spiritual Living in downtown Tacoma, and that's at 206 North J Street. The cost for the class is $89. That's going to include a catered lunch that we will have, and also we will have a workbook that will be there. So all of this is going to be coming together, and if you'd like more information on this, give me a call at 800-872-8852. That's 800-872-8852. Again, this is Saturday, April the 19th, and that's in Tacoma, Washington. Hello, and welcome to the show. Donna Sebo here, first name or initial, and where are you calling from? Hello, caller.
You're not talking to me, are you?
Yes, I am, sir.
I was waiting to talk to somebody in the advertising department.
Okay, so apparently you were put through to me for you were meant to go to somebody else.
Yeah.
All right, sir. That's fine. So my engineer will have to take care of that. So maybe you'll want to hang up and call back in.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you want to chat, 877-876-5227 or Canadians 815-9756. I just wanted to finish off just a safety first comment because, again, like I said, we've been talking about spring cleaning. The greenest garage is one free from the hazards, some of which I have mentioned. But you want to remember if you have lawnmower gasoline or touch-up paint, You need to store products in original containers with their labels. Whatever you do, don't mix products. If you're not a chemist, you're not going to know the reaction. And keep gasoline, if you have gasoline in your garage, because some people have generators that they use for various reasons, and they keep it in there. You want to have it in a no-spill Underwriters Laboratory-approved container. Do not store gasoline or volatile solvents in your water heaters or any other appliances that have pilot lights, obviously, because there's gases that are put off, and they could ignite the gases. You want to also keep flammables away from electrical outlets, tools, and appliances. And, of course, always keep them out of reach of children and pets. And if you have a locked cabinet, that's even better. And you want to be sure your containers have child-resistant caps. I have to just say today I was using a product and it had a child-resistant cap on it. My husband, we were joking because I said, would you please undo this for me? I can't open this. And he jokingly said, of course not. It's for a child. You can't open this. And so he was having a challenge himself trying to get it open, and it ended up having to go and get some pliers because this thing just wasn't going to open. So it's always fun when you talk about the child-resistant caps on things because they are sometimes so child-resistant that an adult with muscles can't even get it open. Donna Sebo here, 877-876-5227. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. Now, by the way, tomorrow we're going to be talking about the Silicon Dragon. Rebecca Sannon is my guest. And this was an interview that we were supposed to have a week ago, and she was in Australia on a business trip and got the times mixed up. But she is going to be talking to us about technology and what is happening in China, and the effect that it's going to be happening globally. And for those of you that keep up with the news, my goodness, China is in the news every single day. And they also have a phenomenal amount of growth that they are evolving into because of the changes that have occurred, that have encouraged entrepreneurship, et cetera. So that's what we're going to be talking about tomorrow, and I just invite you to join us because we're going to have a great, great time with her. Also, what I wanted to let you know about are the people that we're going to be having on next week. Neil Donald Walsh is going to be my guest. He's got a brand new book out, Happier Than God. Yes, that's the title of his book. And Neil is just a delight. He's been a guest on my show before, so I'm looking forward to having him on the air. And then Teresa Tapp, the lady that helps people change the size of their bodies without intense dieting and where you don't stress and strain yourself. This lady is awesome, and she's going to be at the Northwest Women's Show. I'm so delighted to be able to have her as a guest on my program. So she's going to be on with us on Tuesday. Donna Hartley, we're going to be talking about how you can fire up your life. And then Hitting Your Stride with Nan Russell. And then on Friday the 28th, I'm going to be at the Women's Show, so we're going to have a Best of Donna. And that is the way it's going to be because I'm going to be busier than a one-armed paper hanger at the Women's Show, and I won't be able to get to a telephone line directly so that I can do my programming as I normally do. So the first 4 days of the week, we've got a wonderful lineup of guests. Be sure and tell your friends. And if you have questions, comments, or any recipes that you would like to share with me, send me an email, donna@delphiinternational.com. And if you miss information about my guests and you always want to know who's coming up, go to my newsletter, and you'll find every month I have a listing of those people that are coming up as guests on my shows. And don't forget, on the Donna Sebo Show, those archives are always going to be available for you. If you like a show and you've missed it, or you say, gee whiz, I would love to be able to hear such and so, then go back into the archives. You can play those at your leisure whenever you like. So they're all available to you. And I just want to say, remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is very definitely a challenge. It is always going to be a challenge because that's the only way we grow as individuals. So step up to the plate, get ready, and bat your home runs. Because remember, you're the only one that can do it for yourself. Nobody else can do it for you. Have a great day. We'll be with you right here, same time, same place. And we'll be talking about China tomorrow. Talk with you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.